Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Dawn B., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. Today is Friday, December 4th, 2020, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today, we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 21, the first paragraph, But What About the Real Alcoholic? Reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Cheryl Ann, 12 Traditions, Dana P., Reader of the Text, Lois P., Laura W. will read page 164, and our backup reader this morning is Nadia B. The reference number for Thursday, December 3rd, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 15,910. And for this morning, Friday, December 4th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, it's 15,916. That's 15916. Our newcomer greeter this morning will be Suzanne W., and Betsy H. will do the announcements. Thank you to everyone who's serving. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members, and we are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I'll now ask Cheryl Ann M. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Cheryl Ann.
Good morning, group. Cheryl Ann M., recovered, not cured, compulsive eater in Rhode Island. Here are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. Step 1, we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you very much, Cheryl Ann M. And now I'll ask Dana P. to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Dana.
Good morning, Dawn. Thank you for your service. Good morning, my fellows. Dana P. in California. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is a spiritual foundation of these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me do service and pass.
Thank you so much, Dana P. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderator is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 21, the first paragraph. But what about the real alcoholic? Reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. I'll now ask Lois P. to begin reading. Good morning, Lois.
Good morning, Dawn. Good morning, everyone. And Dawn, thank you so much for your service. Lois P. here from New York, gratefully recovered one day at a time. What about the real alcoholic? He may start off as a moderate drinker. He may or may not become a continuous hard drinker. But at some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. So at some stage, I began to lose control. I don't know what stage that was. I think I've always been in the stage of over-consuming foods and sugars and everything that I could get into my body that would help me deal with what was really going on in my life. Even as a child, any type of anxiety or worry would always be satisfied with something someone gave me, or if I was a good girl, I'd get something given to me for that reason. And I started to associate eating with pleasure, eating with quieting myself, eating something to make me feel better. So I perhaps started off moderately because as a young person, a young child, I had no ability to go get in a car, go get my own food. But once I was able to do that, once I went off to college, once even in high school, I was able to drive. After every high school gathering, I would go home and eat. After every date in the early stages of my life, even if it was going out to dinner with someone, I couldn't wait to get home to eat. Why? What was going on for me that turned me from a moderate, quote, normal eater and a normal person in relationship to food to someone who had lost control? Well, as we see in the doctor's opinion, and there is a solution, that there was a basic physical reaction I had to certain things that I did ingest that created a craving. And that craving then was satisfied. And when that craving was satisfied, all my worries or fears or anxieties subsided. So there was this dysfunctional relationship from the beginning, even from childhood. And as I grew up and went through the normal stages of life, even when I was married and my children were thriving and doing well, somehow there was this underlying emptiness, this anxiety, this worry. I couldn't put my finger on it, but my body was telling me I needed something. I needed something. And even though I always felt I had a strong connection to God, and I would pray to God, God, please help me. Please help me not do this. Please help me not consume food in front of the kids with wrappers in the car and driving, trying to unwrap something to eat while I had the baby in the car seat. I would say, God, please help me stop. And I couldn't. I couldn't stop. It didn't matter if I was at a holiday party. All I could think about was that food that was being offered. And if it was time to take something home, despite the fact that I would see people noticing me, I would go back and make sure I had plenty on that plate to take home, more than I would even need, but I needed to have something to fill me up. And it was really that disassociation from what I was feeling and how to soothe myself that became the addictive behavior. Thank you, Dawn. Only coming into program, finding a wonderful sponsor, following these steps, and truly letting God in to satisfy that emptiness, letting God in to fill all of those needs and worries has become my answer. And I encourage anyone to know, just to know that there is an answer here and there is a beautiful community of people that will help you through all of this. So thank you for letting me share. With that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Lois P. That was beautiful. And now I'm going to be opening up the line to take names of people who would like to share on this paragraph. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share with us this morning?
Christina J.
Irene B.
Christina J.
Becca R.
Jana M.
Becca R.
Irene B.
Jana M.
Jana
Irene.
M.
Nina S.
Irene B.
Kathleen O.
Kathleen O.
Nina S.
Nina S. Okay, I have Christina J., Becca R., Jana M., Irene B., Kathleen O., Nina S. Is there someone I missed?
Santa H.
Santa H.
Thank you.
Okay, that's a great lineup. Let's start with Christina J., and if you would please, if you'd like to share your state or country that you're calling from, so those who wish to contact you from our member list may do so. We'd love to hear where you're from as well. So good morning, Christina J., followed by Becca R. Go ahead,
good morning.
Christina.
Thank you. Good morning, Christina J. from the state of Washington here this morning. I don't think I was ever a moderate eater. When I was growing up, I had a wooden leg with a hole in it, and I have always eaten a lot of food, a lot. The thing that was moderate for many years was my binging. It was moderate. I think because I was overeating a lot of normal food, that was kind of quenching the irritable, restless, and discontent that was always with me since I was a child. But then the sugar and all the junk became much more interesting than healthy meals and overeating on healthy meals. And I began to lose control of that consumption, ability to control that consumption of my non-abstinent foods, which I didn't even know, you know, what those were at that point. So diets or binging, what led me to being able to control my binging was the shame of weight gain. And so there would be binging, and then there would be diets. And it was moderate binging and diets for a long time. Then it was starvation or overeating. And overeating on the binge foods, other, you know, starvation diets and overeating. Then it was cravings and caving or cravings and white knuckling. A miserable place to live. Again, in the early days, shame would stop me, but nothing else stopped me. No illness, no anything stopped me. I'm a true compulsive overeater. I'm a real alcoholic or food addict. The only thing that stopped me at one point was opiates. Opiates made me happy. I had a total knee surgery, and opiates kept me from eating. But, you know, today I am a moderate eater. I have 3 moderate abstinent meals a day with one small snack. And why? Because I finally learned after relapse after relapse after relapse that I hadn't taken step one. I'm powerless over that first bite. I cannot flirt with telling myself that today I'm going to make it through. I'll just have it today, and then tomorrow I'll start again. Because that's what I did for a long time, because I came into this world controlling things. So I'm going to control this. I am going to control this, and I can have it today, because tomorrow I'll control it and get back on track, till I couldn't control it anymore, till it just kept happening. You know, my relapse periods of abstinence between relapse became shorter and shorter, until I finally walked away from the last binge in pain about it, had to suffer through the pain. And that's okay, because that's what teaches us that we don't want to live there anymore. I don't want to live there anymore. It's too painful. It's too painful to be white-knuckling. Today I don't have to white-knuckle. Isn't that a miracle? You all know what white-knuckling feels like. It's horrible. It's horrible to have to white-knuckle and suffer. But I have tools and steps today that have brought me to the place, I'll finish up, brought me to the place of being able to do this life on life's terms with God at the helm. He's at the helm. I follow. Love you guys. Thank you for everything. And I wish everyone an abstinent day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Christina J. Now, Becca R., will you share with us, followed by Gina M.? Good morning, Becca, and please share where you're calling from.
Hey, it's Becca R., recovered compulsive overeater, calling in this morning from Kentucky. And I also struck me was the word moderate, because I didn't do anything in moderation. Everything has always been all or nothing. You know, I'm either going to run the marathon or I'm not going to take a walk. I'm going to, you know, get on the elliptical for hours, but I'm not going to do yoga because there wasn't enough calories to be burned. And it's been like that in my life, in my education, in my family as a mother, in my community. It's like all or nothing. But I can also relate to, you know, fooling myself and living in that delusion that what I was doing was moderate, that that it wasn't that extreme, that I wasn't that bad. I can remember thinking, this can't be anorexia because I'm not 60 pounds, you know, I'm a normal body size. Just like this can't be compulsive overeating because I'm not obese. I'm a normal body size. But deep down inside me, I knew something was wrong. I knew that phrase, I would hear it in meetings, to thine own self be true, and I knew that didn't sit well with me. And so it took getting around other truth tellers, other people who had had the spiritual awakening as a result of working the steps. And these people shared with me, and it was a way of mentoring. And I was able to unlock that truth about myself and start to really dive into the different facets of my disease. I was sharing with a fellow yesterday that in the beginning, you know, my abstinence was classified as just don't throw up no matter what. And it has since, especially since coming into the program, it's evolved, and there's a lot more to it. You know, there are allergic foods I don't ingest. There's a plan of eating that I follow. Some of the other things are, excuse me, you know, as being in recovery is to, you know, carry the message and to act as a sponsor, because that keeps me involved in the recovery process. And I say all that because something has come up, and I feel like that deepening layer of the proverbial onion is about to change. As volume eating has come up for me, as from being pregnant, I am noticing I'm not able to take the same amount of volume. And that has like sparked this curiosity of why am I seeking that volume? And so That's really all I have to share today. I'm really grateful to be here and grateful to be alongside of you guys who are doing this with me. Thanks a lot. That's all, pass.
Thank you, Becca R. And now Jana M., followed by Irene B. Good morning, Jana.
Good morning, visionaries. This is Jana M. in Phoenix, Arizona, a recovering compulsive overeater, not recovered yet. I have never been a moderate eater either. I was an overweight child. I discovered very early on that food could bring about an effect of ease and comfort and pleasure. And I, you know, and every emotion was an occasion to eat. But like it's been said, I was a moderate binger at points. I really thought food and weight was my problem because that's what I was told. So I tried so many different diets. I think my first one was like Richard Simmons' Deal-A-Meal. You know, I'm kind of dating myself a little bit there, but if anybody remembers that, there were like these little cards for your protein and veggies that you'd switch over to another section of this little fun book, and it was like a game, and it didn't work, and neither did the paying ways, and neither did laxative abuse, and neither did over-exercising, neither did starvation. And every time I would, you know, I would lose, I've lost 80 pounds probably three or four times, you know, really good chunks of weight, the whole time thinking food and weight was my problem. And what ultimately happened is that as life went on and as the disease progressed in me, I found I was just not able to play those games and do those things. I just didn't have the heart for it. I just didn't have the energy for it. I was tired. I was finally beat into a state of reasonableness. Not when I first came into program in 2013, but really only recently since I got into the Big Book and started like really, really working the 12 steps. And, you know, when I first read the Bedevilments on page 52 and realized, like, yeah, I've had problems with personal relationships. The result of everything I've done is that I can't control my emotional nature, and I'm a prey to misery and depression, and I can't make a living, and I feel useless, and I feel fear, and I'm unhappy. And then I realized, you know, and it was explained to me, oh, hey, I have a physical allergy, a mental obsession, and a spiritual malady that basically makes it so that I have a debilitating emotional response, you know, to life. And food is not going to fill that hole because that hole is the size of God. I need God to fill that. And I had to go through a lot of crap to really get to the point where I could concede to my innermost self that this is the truth of who I am. And I don't have to like it, but thank God, you know, that there is a solution. My problem isn't food. My problem is life. And if I just pick up the spiritual toolkit and work this solution, I can have freedom. Thank you so much. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Jana M. Irene B., will you share with us now, followed by Kathleen O. Good morning, Irene.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your service. I am Irene B., a very gratefully recovered clinic from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Yes, I'm a heart eater. I'm the real McCoy. Trauma at age 6 catapulted me into the world of compulsive overeating. I just remembered feeling restless, antsy. I just remember desperately looking for something to eat. So I ate our chalk multivitamins because when we chewed those vitamins, they were sweet. So I was looking for that effect. But when you eat 20 of them, they were bitter. So keep looking for something, but eesh, never again. That wasn't good. And when I couldn't find anything, I finally stumbled across a jar of sugar. And I remember taking spoonfuls of sugar letting the sugar sit in my tongue and allowing it to melt, and the sensation of the sugar melting in my mouth brought me that sense of ease and comfort. And after that, I mean, from that time forward, my obsession was, where can I get some junk food? I was addicted to sugar. Back then, it was just sugar. And as time developed, I was addicted to sugar and processed flour, processed foods, junk food, anything high calorie, lethal, not good for you. That's what I wanted. It's like my first therapist told me that I was using food to punish myself. And it's like, no way. But yeah, I didn't allow myself to purge until I looked like I was 6 to 7 months pregnant. And it was pretty awful. I was a compulsive overeater from age 6 to age 18, and I was able to diet in between there. I lost a lot of weight when I was 14 years old. Boy, it seemed like a lot of weight, but it was only like maybe 20 pounds. But I guess when you're short, that's a lot of weight. And it's like, wow, I got so much attention. And then, of course, I gained it back and lost and gained it back. And then at age 18, I became bulimic. And 40 years later, God delivered me. And I thank God in this program for delivering me from bulimia, and I passed.
Thank you, Irene B. Kathleen O., now will you share with us, followed by Nina S. Good morning, Kathleen O.
Good morning, Dawn. This is Kathleen O., recovered in Northern California. So what about the real alcoholic? You know, the fact is, once I started eating trigger foods, I would lose all control. I've heard it described as when I could control it, I couldn't enjoy it. And when I could enjoy it, I couldn't control it. And that was me. I would go to a party or out to dinner with friends, and I'd want to be like my friends who could control their food. So I control it in the moment because I didn't want to be different. But I couldn't enjoy it because I was obsessed with wanting more once I put it in my mouth. And I couldn't stop thinking about it. You know, conversation would be happening around me, but I couldn't really hear anything because in my head, all I could think about was that I wanted more. And when I was home and alone and not controlling it, I certainly didn't enjoy it. Maybe the first bite or so, but after that, there's no enjoyment. So, you know, I actually had a conversation with a friend the other day who's overweight, but she's not addicted to food. She's not a real compulsive overeater. She eats the wrong foods and she doesn't exercise. but when she starts, you know, when she eats any of the foods that would trigger me down the path to hell, she's actually able to stop. And I've just never been able to understand how people can do that because I've never been able to. So I always wonder, God, what's that like, you know, to eat and then say, okay, I'm done. That was not me. So this book explained to me for the first time in my life why I could go on a diet after diet. And sometimes I'd actually be successful and lose weight. But it explained why I couldn't keep that weight off, why I would always, always, always go back to the food. So what's different for us, all of us that are on this line right now walking this path? You know, we learn we need a power greater than ourselves that will restore us to sanity around the insanity of compulsive eating. I had to surrender to the fact that I'm never going to be normal when it comes to eating, and that's just a fact. I had to start with willingness to do this work and to keep doing it. I was so desperate when I found this 12-step program that I grabbed a sponsor and I just followed the directions. And I've never followed directions in my life, but I followed the directions of this program because I was so desperate. And guess what? It worked. You know, there's hope and there is freedom, and we can recover from this hopeless state of mind and body. I'll never be cured, but I can be recovered a day at a time. So there is a solution. It's in these steps as outlined in this amazing book. And with that, I pass. Thank you, Dawn.
Thank you, Kathleen O. And now Nina S., will you share with us, followed by Santa H.? Good morning, Nina. And if you'd tell us where you're calling from.
Good morning. Nina S. here from Northern California, a compulsive overeater, and grateful to be here. What stood up to me in this reading was once he started to drink, or once he starts to drink. So the real alcoholic is a real compulsive eater. I had to go through lots of ups and downs around being dishonest, and me being dishonest is usually me being in denial. And I always come back to the same conclusion that I am a compulsive overeater, I have an eating disorder, and I don't respond to foods like other people do, even though I want to. I always kind of come back to the shame stick and the shame circle around that. And my sponsor, she calls it, excuse my language, she calls it fucking with your food. And I do that because I am being dishonest about what I can eat and what I can't eat. So once I start to eat, so once he starts to drink, like, it's over, right? We have a pamphlet on it, like, based on that first compulsive bite, we're doomed, right? It's not the first one, and I have experienced that multiple times. I can have just one time, and then 3 days later I want another one, and why is that haunting me, and why is that cycle continuing? And then, you know, face first in whatever it is. And this year it was no different. I had a face first into Halloween, and you know, the following week I completely got off of white sugar again. It's been a long time since I have been. And now the other foods are falling away because they give me the same response that sugar does. I can be an addict and compulsive about anything. So today I know that I have an eating disorder, that I don't think normally, that I don't want to set off the craving, and I'm noticing more foods that do, you know, getting excited about other white things that maybe aren't the best for me. Or not maybe aren't, or absolutely not. They give me physical reactions that I don't like and that hurt my body. So today I have to check in on the meeting, claim my seat, and say that it's all true, that the stuff, the lies up in my brain are not my reality, and I need God to remove them from me and relieve them from me, and I want to stop fighting them. And this morning I have an appointment to go do an amends from years and years ago for my first jobs. And so I'm just telling on myself that I have some fear, and I have this kind of underlying, like, I call it the internal vibration of going on in my body. And I just am trying to tell myself, you know, we're not going to fight that anymore. And we want the gift that this pain and this process is going to bring us. And so I'm willing to walk through this process. And I've been stewing on it for a couple of weeks, and I called this person on Monday. So I'm ready to go do it. I have my speech. I have the things that I need. I have my financial restitution. And I'm so grateful that we have this process. Thank you, Ines.
Thank you, Nina S. Santa H., will you share with us? And when Santa is done sharing, I'll be opening up the lines to take more names of people who would like to share. Good morning, Santa.
Good morning, Dawn. Thank you all for your service. And thank you, my fellows, for your shares as well. My name is Santa H. I'm a grateful, compulsive overeater living in the solution one day at a time, and calling in from New Jersey. I mean, I love the entire book, but this section is one of my favorites, especially when I'm working with protégés. You know, we have gone through the doctor's opinion and Bill giving us an experience of what it's like to be in the disease and what it's like to get recovered. And now we get to see what the solution is, and we get to decide whether or not we are one of those true or real compulsive overeaters. Because if I wasn't a real or true compulsive overeaters, why would I want to do this work? Why would I want to work hard every day, you know, doing this work and not resting on my laurels? So for me, you know, I guess at one time I was a moderate eater. As a child, I was very thin. Never had a weight issue, or, you know, food was the center focus of life. You know, for every holiday, there was food. Every Sunday, you know, go to grandma's house for dinner. So I thought that was like my training ground, you know, to being introduced to food in such a an empowering way. The hard drinker, yeah, I was impaired and, you know, saw illness coming my way. But I don't remember when, you know, being a moderate and finding ways to stop. But I do remember when I felt that I was a compulsive overeater. Something was wrong with me, but I didn't know the solution yet. I didn't even know about OA. But I am grateful that from all my experiences of the weight gain that I gained, that that was my ticket into this program. And to see that, yeah, I'm a real true compulsive overeater. How I got here, whether or not I was a moderate, it doesn't matter. What matters is that I know who and what I am today. And that I lost all control to my binge foods. And I know once I start, I can't stop. And I'm so grateful today for this book. I'm so grateful to be recovered, abstinent. It is nothing better. It is nothing better for me. And know that I have a way out. And that way out for me is doing 10, 11, 12 every single day, working these steps like my hair is on fire. And thank you all for allowing me to share. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Santa H. And now I'm going to be opening up the lines to take names of people who would like to share. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So I'd like to take about four names of people who might like to share this morning.
Sherry
like
KB.
Sherry
Lynn
KB.
T.
Barbara
Lynn
E.
Stephen
Denise. Is that Liz T?
Yes, Liz.
And Barbara.
Okay. Barbara E, Liz T.
Denise D.
Denise D. Okay. We've got Sherry KB, Liz T, Barbara E, Denise D. Good morning, Sherry KB.
Good morning, Dawn. Good morning, everybody. It's Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Thanks so much for your service, Dawn, and Team Friday, and welcome newcomers and all of us on the line. Yeah, I was biting at the bit for this morning. You know, I just, you know, what about the real compulsive overeater? You know, what does that look like? I can tell you what I look like. I do know that we're garden variety eaters, compulsive overeaters, and I know that why would I turn around and make my trigger foods, my alcoholic foods, my binge foods, my higher power? I mean, that tells me something right there. I have a threefold illness, mental, physical, and spiritual, and that only a spiritual. I have a spiritual malady. I'm bankrupt. It's not a moral issue. I used to think that for years, like, what's wrong with me? You know, why can't I be like other people? Because the truth is I'm not like other people when it comes to the food. And I have a living problem. And I wouldn't have thought that because I was too busy anytime a feeling came in with the food. And so I didn't deal with life very well. I thought I did. My husband actually used to tell me that I used chocolate Valium is what I used to use to get through life. And that was the truth, and that's what I did. And I, you know, until I really got into this work and started really reading the doctor's opinion and understanding what a true compulsive overeater was, I was judging myself really harshly, and I didn't realize that this illness that I had was, you know, physical, mental, and spiritual. And that's the difference between a normal eater and a hard eater and a compulsive overeater. I heard this story once, and I'll try to say it as quickly as I can because I know we're crunched on time here, is that this person loved a certain bag of goodies, and they would go to the store and buy a 30 bag of these things and have one and think about it all day long. So they had the mental obsession. There's another person who came along, but they didn't have the physical allergy to the body because they'd eat one, they'd be satisfied, they'd be done. The second person came along who had the physical craving. They craved it. They ended up eating the entire bag that day and realized, oh, my God, I'm allergic to this stuff. I can't eat it. Okay, the true compulsive overeater, like me, would go buy the 30 bag, try it, eat the entire bag, and then who knows how many months, days, years, whatever, it would take for me to stop using that product. That's the difference between a compulsive overeater, a hard eater, and a moderate eater. They will know that there's consequences, where with me, when I get started, I can't stop. But there is a solution. And, you know, it's either door number one, door number two, and there's no door number three. And with that, I've got to pass. I wanted to finish. Bye.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Sherry KB. Liz T., will you share with us now? And you'll be followed by Barbara E. Good morning, Liz.
Hi, good morning. Thanks, everybody, for your service. This is Liz T., a recovered compulsive overeater in Minnesota. And I, too, have been reflecting on, you know, the line about, well, what about the real compulsive overeater? And at some stage of my eating career, I began to lose all control of my eating consumption once I began to eat. So compulsively eat, right? Because we all need to eat on a daily basis, but it's that first compulsive bite off my food plan, you know, wanting to add a little extra of this or extra of that, or switching things up, you know, after I've committed it, things like that, that those more subtle compulsive type behaviors. And I just think about that as far as, you know, that great obsession, you know, that we all have that obsession, mental uh-huh. obsession, and the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind, and reminds me of page 30 where it talks about that somehow, someday, we will control and enjoy his drinking or eating. It's the greatest obsession of every abnormal drinker or eater. And just how I can relate to that, that how that obsession will take me to the gates of insanity or death. You know, if without a solution, it could just take me to the gutter, just grind me right into the ground. And I'm just grateful to have heard a message of recovery here on this line. And it reminds me when I was still back in the food, when I first came upon this meeting, this phone meeting, and someone sent me the link to a podcast called What is the Real Compulsive Overeater by Kim G. And I remember listening to that still in a food fog and just so desperate, and her words getting through to me, getting through the food fog, and it grabbed a hold of me, and I wanted what you people have. And so I've been here a few years now and really grateful, and grateful to share today. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz T. Now, Barbara E., will you share with us, followed by Denise D. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning, everyone, my sisters and brothers. What beautiful, honest, authentic shares I just heard. Thank you again from the bottom of my heart. I know that I am a real compulsive overeater. I have no doubt that I'm not moderate, that I'm not hard. I was born a compulsive overeater. I had no trauma in my family, no physical abuse, no nothing. And yet I ate. I remember going into my mother's bathroom and finding what I thought was a chocolate bar. It turned out to be an X-Lax bar. I don't know if you know what they are. And I ate the whole thing, and I had a shitty day the next day. And then afterwards, they had a product called AIDS, AYDS, supposedly to help you lose weight. I'd eat the whole box. I couldn't stop from starting. And then once I started, I couldn't stop. And I was only 5, 6, 7 years old. I continued like this for a long time. I gained and lost weight over 100 pounds 9 times before I crawled into OA on my knees and said, "Help me." And everyone reached out their hands and said, "Welcome home. You are one of us." And that made me feel so warm, made me feel that maybe there was hope when I was hopeless. And they said, "Stay for 6 meetings, and if we don't like it, we'll refund your misery." You've heard that before. I stayed for those 6 meetings. I stayed for the miracle. I stayed after the miracle, and I reached back my hand to help others. And this is a program of recovery, and it elevates me, the food and the suffering or the steps. I just wanted to lose the weight, but I knew I need more, especially when it comes to my family, because being sequestered in our home, we can become a little argumentative, resistant, all the things I don't want to be. So I need you, my brothers and sisters. If I have one hand out to my higher power, whatever it is, and one hand out to you, unless I'm a mutant turtle or something, there's no room left for the food. So now my husband has candy all over the house, but it's just like beautiful art to me. I wouldn't take a Monet from the Museum of Art, and I wouldn't take his food or his candy. It's not mine. I know what mine is because I have a plan of action. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Barbara E. And now, Denise D., will you share with us?
Hi, my name is Denise D. from Florida. I am a compulsive overeater. And this passage, the real drinker, the real alcoholic, really hits close to home today. Last night, my boyfriend's business partner texted him that she had just found out that her husband has gone from not feeling well to now they're talking about hospice care because he is dying from cirrhosis of the liver due to his drinking. And so this has just kind of come out of the blue, and I do not know this man personally, although my boyfriend does. And it just kind of puts it right in my face just how fatal the illnesses of addiction are. And this is a man that is in his mid-50s. And so I am a true compulsive overeater. I, too, remember from the time when I was a small child, sneaking food out of the cupboards and out of the refrigerator between meals, knowing that I was not being normal about it. And there were traumas in my life at that time. I was being molested. But I think that I probably would have developed an eating disorder regardless, being in a dysfunctional home and having been traumatized only added fuel to the fire, I think, of what was already there. And I know that the solution isn't in a diet or anything like that. And I am really grateful to be here. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Denise D. And we have time for about a minute share. Is there someone who would like to share who hasn't shared in the last few days?
Cheryl Ann M.
Cheryl Ann M. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning, group. Cheryl Ann M., recovered, not cured, compulsive eater in Rhode Island. And it just brings me to what I do today. In working with others, my very first question is, are you a real compulsive eater? And that's up for them to decide, not me. And if you are, then I say, let's get busy. These steps are do now, understand later. It actually is a no-brainer. And for me, at age 4, I found out that food was a guest in my house. At ages 5 to 6, food became the host. At age 7, food became my master. So if you're ready to change your master, get busy doing these steps. Thank you so much, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Cheryl Ann M., and that was a great way to end our meeting. And thank you to everyone who shared. We'll now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Laura W. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Keep you until then. Good morning, Laura W.
Yes, good morning, everyone. This is Laura W. I'm a recovered compulsive eater, anorexic, and exercise bulimic in South Jersey. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.